Welcome to Sustainability Bridges, a URSIF podcast aimed at building bridges between policymakers, investors, academics, and civil society around the theme of sustainable investing. URSIF is the leading pan-European association, promoting sustainable finance and sustainable investing at European level. In this podcast, the Executive Director of URSIF will invite distinguished guests for a 30-minute conversation on current events shaping the sustainable investing community.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Aleksandra Palińska, and I am the Executive Director for URSIF. For my first episode, I am honored to be joined by Mr. Paul Tang, a senior member of the European Parliament, first elected in 2014 and then re-elected in 2019 for the second mandate. Paul is a member of the Group of Socialists and Democrats. Together, we are going to discuss some of the sustainable finance-related developments and challenges. Dear Paul, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward.
Let's start with a question on the recent debates and controversies with regard to sustainability investing. In recent months, we have observed growing criticism with regard to the financial sector and increased scrutiny from the media. As an active advocate of sustainable investments, what do you think the future holds for sustainable finance and sustainable investments overall?
Well, let me say that increased scrutiny is to be expected the more important ESG framework becomes. And I see different types of criticism. One comes from the Republicans in Texas, which are concerned about woke capitalism. So to say, they don't want forms of ESG investments because that would be imposing on and so on. That's a form of criticism, which is very, where you see that the Republican Party in the US has become so polarized, so populist, that that it's hard to have a conversation with them. That's a criticism I can't really, I find it hard to deal with, so to say.
So do you think this is a more, I would say, US-oriented, I would say, issue? Or is it something that you also see as, you know, in terms of growing debate in Europe as well? And to what extent do you think that maybe those debates and political developments in US can somehow influence what is also happening on the European markets, but also in terms of EU regulatory developments?
The criticism from the American Republic is one type of criticism. The other type of criticism comes from, among others, The Economist. ESG framework is overblown and can't save the planet, in a nutshell. And this I find, in a sense, more interesting, because when we started to develop the sustainable finance framework, we never assumed that it would save the planet. So they sort of, but we think it's essential to have, right? So that you need, if you want to make the transition towards sustainability, and for me, sustainability is in a very broad sense, it's not just about the environment, it's also about social governance, governance aspects. If you want to make that trend, make that transition, you need to change private investment or the perspective on private investment. I think The Economist is, in this sense, slave of a defunct economist, as Milton Keynes said, John Maynard Keynes said, sorry, a slave of Milton Friedman, saying where they see, where the Milton Friedman sees the company as a money machine and it's just what it needs to do to make money. I think the Economist is, in that sense, stuck in the 70s. What the sustainable finance framework aims to do is to have this broader perspective from corporates and from investee companies and investors, so saying, well, we need to have a broader view on what you can achieve and want to achieve. And of course, and then at the same time, like I expected improved scrutiny because it's work in progress. It's not perfect, right? We started in 2018. This is a major fundamental change. This is, for me, it's a license to operate for markets, for capital markets in particular. But it's a fundamental change, and that takes time. And of course, also corrections along the way. But I do not buy that you can make the transition while the corporates or the investors are simply thinking they are money machines. It won't happen. It just won't happen. So yes, you need also to price externalities, no doubt about it. But that in itself will not make this change. Also, because not every risk or every impact can be monetized. And this is the part I don't understand. It's the economists see as everything is a market. It's silly textbook economics what they are advocating. Not every risk can be monetized. Not every impact can be monetized. When we talk about biodiversity, water quality, working conditions, you can boil it down to one number. Still, it doesn't make it less real. The fact that you cannot monetize it, the fact that you cannot put it in one credit, doesn't make it less real. And this is a way there you see that there's a fundamental different view going back to the 70s to Milton Friedman or going forward to the 21st century.
So do you think that we would actually need some further developments in terms of pricing in the externalities? I mean, do you think there should be more models developed for companies to actually do that? Or do you think there are any other developments that would actually help? Or do you think there is a different approach towards that needed?
Well, I think pricing externalities will help a great deal, especially when it comes to CO2 emissions. I think that's an obvious one. We have the instruments to do that, most notably the carbon tax or the emission trading system. So we have the systems that could make it work. It's not easy because it requires a lot of accounting, so to say, but it's doable. But sometimes you also need to set norms and standards, right? So we have this array of instruments. Pricing is definitely one of them. I'm an economist by background. So yeah, I think pricing is for me a very good option. But then again, I'm also a politician and I realize that not everything can be priced, right? Or maybe because I'm an economist and you need to set norms and standards. What I, for example, find very interesting is how vulnerable our economies have become. And I think I see a growing awareness among policymakers and politicians that our economies have been growing very dependent. And we're now looking at a geopolitical world where we don't want to be dependent on one supplier. And let's, for example, the chip production in Taiwan takes up half the world, half of the world supply. Well, that dependency that should concern us. Now, do you want to price that or do you want to set norms or standards? I'm inclined to think that maybe we should look into to standards to say, okay, you can't be over dependent on one supplier. Make sure that. So in that sense, I'm pragmatic. I see a range of instruments. I think they are important. But one of these instruments is a sustainable finance framework where we have a broad perspective where the E, the S, and the G, we try to develop metrics so that we can assess the functioning of an investee corporation or an investor's portfolio.
Well, in looking now back at what has been achieved so far in terms of the sustainable finance framework and where we are now, and as you mentioned, that actually there may be some adjustments needed going forward. How do you see the future of the sustainable finance agenda and framework also in the context of the upcoming European elections? Do you believe there is the need to develop the sustainable finance framework further? And do you think there will be sufficient political appetite for that?
Okay, that's two different questions. I think we're sort of halfway, right? So we started in 2018. Let's try to complete it in 2028. Let's say that. One of the concern, and that's what I hear from many financial markets participants, is data, right? So we need better data to start with. Now, I think there's good development with the European Single Access Point, with data that now come forward with the CSRD and the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. So yes, we are improving in data. What I still miss is that the methodologies from which data are converted to sustainability rating are still very unclear, right? So we need also to, when we move forward, have more clarity on methodologies, transparency on methodologies. So I think it's essential that we start also to regulate the sustainability rating and the sustainability rating agencies. Demands on transparency and on governance are needed, because you need a transparency on methodology to have some sort of convergence. We now see the same company can be rated very differently. And there may be good reasons to do that, but it should be clear what the reasons are. Now it's a black box and we can't learn from each other. I see the problem of greenwashing at this stage. I think we should step in. I was rapporteur of the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation. Looking back, I didn't think we would, we didn't expect the SFDR to be such a success, that so many would fall into the categories Article 8 and 9. Maybe we should look. And I think greenwashing is one of the toxic issues, right? Because it undermines the credibility of the markets on the one hand, so that may have this backlash, which you also see partly see in the articles in The Economist, and rightly so. But it also shows that the market is not doing what it's supposed to do, to allocate funds towards sustainable investments so that we can make the transition towards a sustainable economy and society in 2050. So that's bad for many reasons. Perhaps may I add one thing to the list, which I think we need to do in a sustainable finance framework. It has been too much focused on green. And that was a choice from the start, right? So we developed a taxonomy. Personally, I would have started the taxonomy the other way around. What is brown or what is red? So to say, because that more in line with the risk assessment that you already see in the financial sectors. So we have the risks of climate change and of climate change policy. They are, for example, on bank balance sheets or are on the balance sheets of pension funds. Would it be a way to start? But we started with green. And now we're still stuck in this green corner. And this green corner is not very big. So the political discussion are, I want to be green too. So then we have the discussion of, yeah, well, gas as fossil fuel is also green. And you see, nuclear is also green. And that has to do with the fact that we are still stuck in this green corner. So we need to expand and to have much more focus on transition, because that's the main challenge that we have, how to make the transition. And there are some activities and some firms that will not survive this transition. But I would like to think that the bulk of activities and the bulk of the corporates can make this transition. So we should focus much more on that. Well, that's sort of what I see as an outline. So we're halfway, there are issues at the table, but we also need to complete the framework by having good access to data, by having clear methodology or a discussion on methodologies, by focusing much more on transition and, yeah, fight greenwashing.
Great. Thank you for this very comprehensive answer. Indeed, we actually heard you while speaking to EIOPA. We heard you say that sustainable finance is not about being green, it's about becoming green. In that context, how do you see the role of investors and asset managers in accelerating the transition towards a sustainable economy? And well, you're already a little bit elaborated in terms of, you know, how would you see the further regulatory developments, you know, to best support it. I understand by basically further extending the EU taxonomy framework to encompass also some other categories, right? But yes, I mean, how do you see specifically the role of investors in accelerating this transition? And also, do you think that the green sustainability related and maybe also transition bonds could have the potential to support the transition also?
Yeah, I think to start with the latter, I think the idea of a transition bond takes interest from the markets, right? So it seems obvious, but it also takes an interest from me. But I think it's important to make that transition so that you use the criteria we already have in the taxonomy, for example, the do not significant harm criteria, to say we made a transition. So you try to come from the red to an intermediate area where you say I at least satisfy the do not significant harm criteria. That's a type of transition that we really need. And it's, for example, taking up now in the review of the CRR, CRD, where we discuss investments by banks in this case, in fossil fuels, in exploration, for example, in exploration of oil and gas, where we think, no, this is very, very risky, and we need to get out of the activity of exploration. That type of discussion, I think, is very good, and investors can play a crucial role in that, in my mind. So I think the best part of sustainable finance is engagement, right? Because it's about the transition, engage to make sure that the investee company, the corporates, make the transition. At the same time, not every transition is credible, right? So this is why the transition plan is crucial, because you invest in a company, in a corporate, until the moment you no longer believe that it's indeed able to make this transition. If I take an example, for example, from my country, the Netherlands, where you see there was a very interesting discussion on the Shell oil company, where at the end, some of the institutional investors, the Dutch pension funds, decided to no longer invest in Shell because they didn't think the transition that Shell is putting forward is very credible. But I think that's a very good discussion that we need to have. In that sense, it's not an easy task for the investors, I admit that, because you have to look ahead and not 1 year ahead, but to look ahead for quite some years. But then again, you can play a very good role, and investors can play a very important role in that.
Indeed. And do you think that currently sustainable finance regulatory framework, also the one in the making, is sufficiently, I would say, supporting or enabling the direction in which we are going? I mean, the aim, objective to ensure that corporate transition plans become reliable and in a way giving the right tools to investors, right, to compare them across. And also, do you think there are enough of existing also market methodologies in terms of actually tools for companies to use for that? I mean, what are your views on that?
Well, what I try to do is very much focus on the transition plans and to beef them up, so to say, to make sure that that's enough in the transition plan to have, well, at least a good discussion and preferably a good assessment whether the transition is indeed credible or not. This is why I also focus on the sustainability ratings and the sustainability rating agencies, because you need, as an investor, also to have an assessment of the transition plan. You can, investors that are not able to do it on their own, they need to be able to rely on the sustainability rating agencies. I think that's a crucial element in the transition, that it's the transition plans. Now, it's good to see that, for example, also the European Central Bank has joined that. They're very much putting forward the idea of the transition plans for bank, and I think that's very much needed. What you see when banks, I'm sometimes surprised how concentrated climate risks or the risk of climate change policies is. In I think 10% of the banks hold are vulnerable for climate change or climate change policy risks. So I think that's one of the instruments that we need to develop much further. I think it's on the table. For example, I very much introduced it. I defend it in the EU GBS, the EU Green Bond Standard. The European Parliament has put forward that these transition plans take a central place. Now we're engaging with the Council and the Commission. But I try to be firm on this because I think it's one of those elements that we really need. So it's not just about the EU GBS. It's all other in all other parts of the sustainable finance framework. We need that too. So we need beefed up transition plans.
You have already also touched upon the greenwashing and what you refer to as a kind of increasingly toxic debate on that. Indeed, it is emerging as a kind of a major preoccupation for policymakers, supervisors, and actually, well, investors. However, the understanding of what constitutes greenwashing tends to vary. For instance, IOSCO considers greenwashing to be a willful misrepresentation of a product's sustainability characteristics or ambition, while ESMA observed that greenwashing can be broader and often occurs unintentionally. Do you think we need a common definition of greenwashing, and how would you attempt to define it? And do you think we should differentiate between deliberate act of misinformation or mis-selling and the instances whereby misinformation or mislabeling happens unintentionally, for instance, due to the regulatory ambiguity or legal uncertainty? And how could the sustainable finance regulatory framework be adapted to address the issue?
Yeah, when it comes to defining greenwashing, I feel more at ease with the second definition. It doesn't need to be intentional to have this impact. And the point I always make about a transition plan is suppose a company, or let's say an oil company, invests in wind energy, but is on the overall, it's still a very brown company. Is that another form of greenwashing? It depends. It depends on the transition that the oil company is about to make. Will it indeed make this transition or not? So it could, in fact, extend the life of the brown company by investing partly in green energy. I would like to think that, well, that doesn't contribute to transition. So in my mind, it should contribute to the transition towards sustainability. I find intentions always very hard to measure, because I see parts of the financial sector that are very good in plausible deniability, right? But I think what we need for that is also to have, for example, minimum standards at least. And so like I started on the SFDR, we didn't expect to have a huge success. The take up has been much broader than we expected. That is somewhat odd, so to say. That is fishy. Maybe we should look at minimum standards, at least for what sustainable investment is, without exactly defining, but at least put forward minimum standards so that that we raise the bar on that, and that may already help to improve the way the markets work. But greenwashing, and in my mind, we need to address greenwashing, like I said, because we want to make the transition.
I think you're touching upon a very important subject there. Indeed, I think in this context, I mean, SFDR has been quite widely debated within the asset management industry, as indeed it is felt that some of the definitions, especially of Article 8 products, products with ESG characteristics, are not sufficiently clear. I mean, in a way, actually, there is no level one definition of what constitutes a product with ESG characteristic. And hence, that may be also one of the reasons why, you know, the uptake, and I would say of this, and why we have seen a huge increase of products that are being marketed as Article 8 products. So would you indeed see there a need to adjust the SFDR framework and maybe also clarify the definitions in addition to together basically creating, you know, a framework including the minimum criteria, as you mentioned, basically maybe turning it to more into a form of a standard, right? Well, indeed, right now, in a way, SFDR, even though it was intended as a disclosure regime, it kind of ended up going kind of halfway towards creating a standard. And I think indeed in this context, the debates on greenwashing are a little bit controversial and challenging, in a sense that right now, the industry is also in some cases left without certain answers and a little bit needs further guidance and more regulatory certainty.
I think we broadly agree, right? And Eurosif has been in the past years and up to now also very critical and constructive at the same time. So that's very good. Like I said, when we discussed the SFDR, we had a difficult discussion at that time with the Council and Commission, because we want to enshrine the double materiality. completely changed the proposal at that point. So it was a very difficult discussion. In fact, we want, the European Parliament had the position, we'd want all to disclose, whether you're green or brown, doesn't matter, just disclose. So don't put the burden of proof just on the green investors. That's how we saw, okay, we get the double materiality, so the risks and the impacts, but of course we didn't have the disclosure on all. What we did not expect is that the fact that you disclose under Article 8 is also seen as proof that you are indeed green or sustainable in some way. It was a transparency framework. It's not the act of disclosing, it's the information in the disclosure. So yeah, okay, but that's how it is. So we need to find ways to have, and like I said, minimum standards, especially for Article 9, where you have sustainable investments. Perhaps also for Article 8, which might have the disadvantage, of course, that you don't disclose anymore. You disclose less if you don't apply for Article 8. So there's a trade-off there, but it could also work for Article 8.
In terms of actually creating those minimum criteria, minimum standards, I mean, would you see this being done through a revision of SFDR, or would you rather see it, you know, in a form of a new legislative proposal?
Well, in that sense, I'm pragmatic. If it can be done by secondary legislation, fine, because that's quicker, right? And when we discussed the SFDR, we were, in a sense, we were not very prescriptive. We want to see how the market would develop, right? And took very much the idea on board that, in that sense, the RTSs, the regular technical standards, are important to further develop. So if it's possible with secondary legislation, I would say yes, because I think we are then on the same line. We see the concerns, not just in the European Parliament, but also with the supervisors in many member states. So I think there's progress to be made. But if not, if it cannot be done in secondary legislation, why not put forward primary legislation? We need to tackle this and not try to ignore it.
Definitely. Well, from some of the discussions we've been having actually with the European supervisory authorities, we understand that, you know, they believe their hands are kind of tied by the level one, and that they cannot go beyond the level one mandate. Therefore, unfortunately, there may be a need for a form of a level one regulatory legislative intervention.
Yeah, well, then again, I'm not a legal expert, so I hear different views, and I just wait how that discussion evolves. But I, as a politician, I like to say, well, let's try to do it quickly.
Of course. And looking maybe now a little bit more ahead and at a more political level. So, I mean, of course, you know, no one of us have a crystal ball, but what would be your kind of forecast, I mean, in terms of the next European elections? And I don't know, what would you also see the need for in terms of any further sustainable finance or sustainability-related regulatory developments for the next European Commission?
Yeah, well, I think I've already outlined some of the issues that should be on the agenda that complete or correct the sustainable finance framework, data, methodologies, greenwashing and SFDR, transition bonds. I think we should still work, but that's really work for the next commission on a taxonomy, which includes the S and the G, right? So it's something that we really need. It's not just about the planet, it's also about the people on the planet. So I think that should be definitely on the agenda. I very much hope also that this has been my expectation, and I hope it will work out along that way, that once we get further into the transition, that it will also may be more sort of logical to use the sustainable finance framework. You asked about what is the political will. I think the political will has taken a setback by the discussion we had in the taxonomy on gas and nuclear. It's a discussion we should not, doesn't raise enthusiasm, so to say, to discuss this issue. So it was a rough, difficult debate. It doesn't bring any momentum. In fact, it may have stopped momentum. But let's move beyond that and look for the momentum and complete and correct the framework where necessary. And I think the further we go into the transition, the more need for this framework will be. So in that sense, I have the opposite views. I expect the more we price CO2, the more usable the framework will become, because then we get further into the transition. And like I said, it's all about transition. So the second thing that we need to do is the first is to complete the framework by focusing more on the social consideration and the covenants aspect. But we also need to look much more at the transition, to finance transition.
Great. Thank you very much, Paul, for joining us today and for this very insightful conversation. Many thanks for your time.
Of course. My pleasure. Thank you.
It brings us to the end of this insightful conversation and the end of today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Do not hesitate to like, follow and share this episode of Sustainability Bridges. Eurosif will continue in the next episode to bridge the gap between the policymaking and the practice of sustainable investing with the help of distinguished guests. In the meantime, please visit our website and follow us on social media to stay tuned. See you next time for a new episode of Sustainability Bridges.